Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, April 15th. Your taxes are due today, unless you file for an extension. So get cracking. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to use the word tax a lot, but in a different context. We're going to talk about a new report that compares the tax benefits that not-for-profit health systems enjoy with the level of charity care that they provide, and a new move by the Biden administration to make medical debt less taxing on consumers who are struggling to pay their bills. To tell us why we shouldn't just file these two tax developments away are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
The tax man cometh, Dave. Since we're talking about transfer payments today, I'm thinking about the massive transfer payments between states orchestrated through the federal government's tax and spending policies. In 2019, for example, Kentucky received almost $3 in federal payments for every dollar it paid in federal taxes. Thank you, Mitch McConnell. By contrast, Connecticut received back only 83 cents for every dollar it sent to the federal coffers. These types of state-based transfer payments wreak havoc in Europe, but cause barely a ripple here. The ability for richer states to subsidize poorer states so seamlessly is an underappreciated aspect of the U.S. geopolitical system. It will work as long as the body politic believes it to be fair. So on this tax day, I'm happy to be an American and choosing to see our political system for all its warts as a glass that is half full.
All right. And thank you for being so generous.
We are generous in Illinois.
We are. We are definitely generous here. Julie, how are you doing?
I am well. I am enjoying a sunny spring break in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it has been really nice to feel some heat.
Yeah. All right. Good for you. Now, before we talk about tax exemptions, charity care, and medical debt, let's talk about how you pay your medical bills, deductibles, and copays. Dave, do you pay with cash, credit, check, or some kind of banking app on your phone? And when you do you pay on the spot, or do you make them send you a bill?
I am under the strictest orders never to pay a medical bill at the point of care, full stop. My marital bliss depends on it. So a bill always will come in the mail.
Got it. Good advice. Julie, how about you? Apps, cash, anything in between?
Yeah, I'll do anything to pay a bill online. And if I have to find a stamp, it's all over. That's really tough. But I've been noticing that a lot of providers are using InstaMed and other types of payment approaches. So I love seeing Bill Marvin and his team make it successful out there.
That's interesting. I don't even know where the stamps are in my house. So I know what I'm going to do after this. Thank you. When I can, I'll ask the doctor's office or hospital or dentist to send me a bill. They're all so bad at revenue cycle that there's a good chance that I'll never get a bill. So when I do have to pay up front, I'll use my credit card to get points for something that I'll probably never buy or use. So there you have it. What a system. Let's talk about tax exemptions and charity care. The Loan Institute compared the value of tax exemptions enjoyed by 275 not-for-profit health systems with the amount of charity care and other reported community benefits that they provided for 2019. The Institute said 227 of the 275 systems ran a fair share deficit that year, meaning their tax breaks exceeded the value of the charity care and community benefits they provided, in some cases by hundreds of millions of dollars. The total fair share deficit was $18.4 billion. Dave, what does the report add to the debate over community benefits? Are not-for-profit health systems doing their fair share? And what can we do to level the playing field so consumers benefit from all these tax breaks?
Tax day is a good day to discuss societal transfer payments. In this case, society subsidizes not-for-profit hospitals in exchange for the public benefit they provide. Is it a good deal for society? According to the Loan Institute's Fair Share Spending Report, Dave, as you outlined, the answer is a resounding no to the tune of $18.4 billion in 2019. What I liked about the loan analysis is that it eliminated counting Medicaid underpayment and health professional education, which nonprofit hospitals generally include to pump up their community benefit contribution number. The report's deficit figure, the $18.4 billion, seems in the ballpark to me. A couple of years ago, I estimated the total annual societal cost of tax exemption was approximately $40 billion. That means on average, hospitals receive roughly $2 in financial gain for every dollar they invest in community benefit. I'm glad the Loan Institute is conducting and publishing this type of research on the relative costs of tax exemption for hospitals. It adds to the broader debate regarding allocation of healthcare resources. And it will come as no surprise to you, Dave, that in my own humble opinion, the US spends far too much on healthcare and nowhere near enough on health promotion and social determinants of health. Any economist will tell you that if you want less of something, you should tax it. So if I were the health policy czar, I would tax nonprofit hospitals and redirect those proceeds to develop robust community health networks, particularly in lower income, urban and rural areas. That doesn't mean nonprofit hospitals need to become for-profit entities and forego their corporate missions. Far from it. All it means is they would pay taxes as they pursue those charitable missions. Although it seems counterintuitive, I believe paying taxes would liberate nonprofit hospitals to run their businesses as they see fit, without the strings that come from having to meet societal demands for community benefit. This is particularly important at a time of dynamic industry change like we're in right now. It's interesting to see how this hospital subsidy debate is playing out in real time in Massachusetts with its biggest health system, Mass General Brigham. According to the Loan Report, MGB's fair share deficit in 2019 was $625 million. That was the third highest in the nation. Massachusetts is one of five states that establishes an overall benchmark for total healthcare spending. In 2019, that benchmark was 3.1%, and actual spending rose at 4.3%, well above the benchmark. The Massachusetts Health Policy Commission blamed MGB, fined them, and ordered them to develop a performance improvement plan to lower their overall cost. MGB has responded with a very public campaign challenging the commission's findings, all of the commission's findings. And this controversy comes as MGB is seeking approval for a $2.3 billion capital expansion program, which is certainly going to drive up costs. The political pressure on hospital costs is rising, even on the nation's most prestigious and expensive academic medical centers like MGB. An irresistible consumerism force confronts an immovable healthcare industrial complex. Let's see where the chips fall.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any comments or questions for Dave?
Yeah, Dave, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what's happening with the governing situation, governance boards of mostly health systems. You know, these boardrooms are typically filled with people who understand money, or they're big business people in their communities. But it seems like the second they walk into those nonprofit boardrooms, they totally lose the financial sense. And it's interesting, Rob Freeman and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. It's like they literally become different people. So what changes in governance could improve the situation?
Yeah, check your brain at the door as you enter the boardroom. It's really true, Julie. You put your finger on a critical problem. And I think it's largely structural in nature. Most nonprofit hospital boards are large, philanthropic in orientation, sometimes even political in orientation. For example, it's state-sponsored organizations. Board members aren't compensated. They often lack necessary expertise in the complex business of healthcare. And they often cede responsibility for strategy to management. In my own opinion, boards should own strategy. Compounding the problem, and unlike in for-profit organizations where shareholder equity is part of compensation, there is no shared financial interest between a board and its management team in the nonprofit organization's long-term success. Boards are voluntary and management works under short-term contracts. Short-term thinking, therefore, triumphs. What to do about it? Knowledge is power. I think nonprofit health systems need to be aware of these structural flaws and adjust for them. that translates into smaller compensated boards with robust capacities to recruit individuals with desired expertise and deep knowledge of the healthcare industry. Boards should also take active roles in strategic planning, performance accountability, and succession planning. That doesn't always happen, as you were mentioning. And finally, good governance has never been more important. And to be fair, many nonprofit health systems have undertaken the types of structural reforms I've described, but there needs to be much, much more.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about this latest move by the Biden administration to address the medical debt burden on consumers. In many ways, it's related to our first topic. The White House announced a number of actions that it says will lessen the burden of medical debt and protect consumers. Among them, HHS is going to investigate provider billing practices and how they affect affordability and medical debt. Medical debt will be eliminated from credit decisions and government lending programs. And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will ramp up educational tools to help consumers navigate the, quote, complex and often confusing medical billing landscape, close quote. Julie, what's your reaction to the White House announcement? Do any of the actions hold more promise than others? And do you think the market will respond to these actions in terms of new solutions for consumers?
Well, this is really the second in kind of the really big 1-2 punch on medical debt after the three largest credit agencies that we talked about a couple weeks ago here, took their steps in this direction. So the administration's piling on, and their whole framing is, I think, quite valid in many ways. They argue that medical debt is a bad predictor of whether someone will actually pay their bills because it's not like they wanted to incur the debt in the first place. It was for some sort of health care or trying to obtain health. And it's not like, you know, other credit card or car loans. And therefore, they shouldn't really be held accountable in the same way for that kind of debt. So it makes a lot of sense on the surface. But when you really dig in, you know, it could be problematic. When I looked at these four pieces of what the administration's saying, you know, the first one talks about holding providers accountable. And first of all, I think providers think that they already do a tremendous amount to make care available to those who need it most and can't necessarily afford it. But lawsuits are on the rise against patients. So there's definitely a lot going on out there that is conflicting. And I think, again, it probably comes down to some people kind of caught in the middle of being able to actually afford it and then racking up bills. I think this is a place where there's been a lot of private market innovation with companies like OODA that was acquired by Cedar and HealthBridge that actually has a really interesting model of paying providers almost immediately after bills are incurred and then taking the risk that that consumer will actually pay. And they actually help cut some costs out of the system by doing so and crowdsource funding to support the model. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So I think this is a place where you'll see more private market assistance come in and try to make sense of the timing and the amount of payment between providers and patients. The next two, I would say, the government really asking agencies across the federal government to eliminate medical debt as a factor in their own underwriting processes. This makes a lot of sense to me, especially when it comes to veterans. I mean, I think we should be doing anything we can for anyone who's put themselves in harm's way for our country to really help them out in the areas of healthcare, for sure. But with other underwriting products, I mean, we pose some risk to consumers' ability to pay overall when we do things like that. So I worry a little bit about that in the long run. And the last part about helping consumers know their rights, this is great and could potentially fuel a lot of private market activity in this space, but I'd rather see us help consumers understand the value of the service they're receiving in the first place. Like, I don't know why we would help people understand how to navigate the complex billing processes, which is effectively, you know, well beyond kind of financial responsibility 101, when we could just actually help them buy better and understand where to go for the highest value services. So I'm a little conflicted with that one, to be honest.
Buy better. It makes a lot of sense to me. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any comments or questions for Julie?
Well, I love those birds chirping in the background. It makes me jealous. and I do love also your observation about having consumers become better buyers of healthcare services. I don't think there's anything that will transform the industry more quickly than better buying of healthcare services. But anyway, back to the question at hand. And Julie, you went through the Biden administration's plan fairly thoroughly and combined it with what private credit agencies are doing to reduce the burden of medical debt on American consumers, particularly as it relates to individual credit standing. But none of these initiatives, and you alluded to this, eliminates medical debt, and regulatory policies often trigger unintended consequences. I'd love to hear your take on any unintended downsides for patients, providers, and/or payers of these public and private interventions to reduce medical debt burden. Are any red flags on the horizon that the policymakers aren't seeing?
Yeah, you know, there's some data around what consumers can and can't afford. You know, Kaiser Family Foundation tells us that 40% of households don't have enough assets to pay your typical private health plans cost sharing, out-of-pocket costs, co-payments, et cetera. And I think the Biden administration really touts that healthcare coverage would really eliminate a lot of these issues, but a lot of Americans can't even afford what that healthcare coverage is in the first place. So I'm not so sure that we're really seeing the reality there. And Dave, like you said, taking a bite out of medical debt doesn't prevent it from actually adding up. So I can imagine that lenders are smart. They're going to look at the data. I mean, there's so much data that exists on people, and they're going to look at that data and really look for the people who they think will be able to pay their bills and they think may have some medical debt that, okay, it's not going to count against them, but at the same time, they're trying to get a picture of that consumer's ability to pay. So lenders will get smart and potentially try to avoid consumers that can't pay. And, you know, same thing could happen on the provider side, frankly. I'd hate to think that that's true, but I think that we see that in healthcare all the time. So we might be putting, you know, consumers at risk in ways that we didn't really realize. And, you know, consumers will always, this is a very probably generalized statement, but always try to get as much as they can in a loan for something that's really important to them. And if medical debt doesn't count and they get themselves in over their heads, that's a bad situation too. So finance 101 comes into play here again with consumers' ability to understand the risks that they put themselves in.
Yeah, that medical redlining, something we should watch out for. Thanks, Julie. I count on the complex and often confusing medical billing landscape to forget to send me a bill. And you'd be surprised how often it happens. Thanks, Dave, and thank you, Julie. Great discussion today, as usual. Now let's briefly talk about other big news that happened this week. Julie, what other healthcare news caught your attention and why?
Well, CB Insights just published a report yesterday saying that the global digital health investment is down 36% in Q1. And this is the first time we've seen a material decrease in a couple years. So I think we're finally seeing the reality check hit digital health. And I, for one, actually think it's a healthy bit of a correction.
Yeah, that was a big drop. Thank you. Dave, a lot happened this week. What stood out to you?
Down rounds coming. No fun for entrepreneurs. I'm paying attention to the post-COVID turf wars between doctors and other medical professionals regarding practice regulations. The wars are heating up. Nurses, techs, and pharmacists have enjoyed increased responsibilities that have come with relaxed regulatory guidelines during COVID, and they don't want to go back to the way it was. The AMA and other doctor groups call this scope of practice creep, and they're claiming that this creep jeopardizes patient safety. Does it really? The battle over scope of practice will play out in state legislatures all across the country, so stay tuned.
Healthcare Thunderdome, right? This should
right.
be interesting.
Right.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. And if you follow our show on Apple Podcasts or your streaming service, you'll get notified each time a new episode is available. And don't forget to tell a friend about Foresight Friday Roundup. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of Best 20 Minutes in Healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.